This is World Affairs Monthly, and I have Dr. Gail Gazelle on the line. She is a medical doctor in the Boston metropolitan area. She's been an internist, who's worked for many years in end-of-care life. She's now a professor, and I think that's part-time at the Harvard Medical School. She's now a coach, effectively a coach, and maybe even a counselor and therapist to other physicians who are suffering from what we call burnout. And I guess I think everybody knows what burnout is, but I'll kind of define it. It means basically that you're deeply dissatisfied with the situation you're facing. In the case of medical professionals, you know, they're pretty upset. They're burned out, so to speak. She's recently published a book titled Mindful MD, Six Ways Mindfulness Restores Your Autonomy and Cures Healthcare Burnout. Mrs. Gazelle, or Dr. Gazelle, can be found on the net at gailgazelle.com, and I'll spell that for everybody. G as in George, A-I-L, G as in George, A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. Gail, it's really great to talk to you. You know, I have to confess that when I first came across your thesis, I said, well, you know, that's pretty cool. But then I came to realize after a couple of weeks that you're basically presenting a simply extraordinary thesis to the world. And that thesis is, if we don't overcome this problem ourselves, meaning from within ourselves, that is the system that we use right now to provide healthcare is failing us to a large degree. You know, you can use other adjectives, it's breaking down or whatever. There's a lot of suicides. Doctors are killing themselves at a rate of about one out of 2,500 a year, something like that, which is simply extraordinary. And so you're like I said, you brought this thesis to the public, and I'm going to say, and I'm really not buttering you up or anything, but I'm going to say this is super important, and I came to realize how important it is, and I would agree with you that there is no hope unless we have an intrinsic solution, meaning you look for the solutions inside yourself, and of course, hope at the same time that the government can make improvements, you know, regulatory improvements. So anyway, that's what I wanted to present to you. I just wanted to explain that what you're doing is really extraordinary, and I think it's yeah.
Thank you. I really appreciate that, Tom, and I hope everyone can hear me okay.
Yeah, I think they can. Yeah.
I've been a physician for my entire career, which is over 30 years now. And as you mentioned, I was a hospice physician for many years, and I really saw a lot of unnecessary suffering as people approached the final chapter of their lives.
Yes.
And I'm very interested in this topic of unnecessary suffering, because there's plenty of solid suffering, necessary suffering, certainly near the end of life, and there's a lot of suffering in healthcare, even for people who are not at the end of their lives. What we've seen over the last decade plus is that healthcare has become increasingly corporatized, with an emphasis on the bottom line, an emphasis on numbers, an emphasis on productivity.
Yeah.
And we've seen how very difficult that is for patients. But what may not be as obvious to your listeners is how very difficult that has been for physicians, nurses, and other providers in the healthcare ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
And even before the pandemic, we had very high levels of physician burnout. This was a growing problem. And within the healthcare world, we were hearing more and more about this. Articles in medical journals, articles in big papers like the New York Times and the Washington Post. But unfortunately, with kind of the ravages of the pandemic, we've seen a major uptick in levels of burnout. And say that is really impacting the healers, the physicians, in really my main focus. And it's made it very difficult for them to do their jobs. It's left them in a state of what many call moral distress, where they're so tied down by all of the insurance and government and health system regulations that they can't give their full attention to the vulnerable patient that they need to take care of. And it's called moral distress or moral injury because physicians didn't go into the practice of medicine to count numbers. They went into the practice of medicine to help their fellow human beings.
So
we're seeing a crisis in healthcare. and we're seeing under-resourcing, under-staffing, tremendous difficulties for physicians and others, and physicians are burning out as a result of that. So that's left physicians, unfortunately, having a lot of issues, as you mentioned, suicidality, depression, anxiety, burnout, and the cost for all of us in North America, if not at other places across the globe, is quite mighty because physicians are choosing to retire early, they're cutting back on their clinical duties, they're looking for all kinds of other ways to make money other than practicing medicine, not because they're bad people and not because they don't care about their patients, but because they're really trapped by a highly dysfunctional healthcare system that has them really just kind of pushing through patients at a rate that is not good for anybody. So that's a little bit of the background of where we are now. And as a physician myself, as an educator at Harvard Medical School, as a mindfulness teacher, you know, I've been watching this. I've coached well over 500 physicians and physician leaders over the last 12 years. And I've really seen the ravages of burnout. Seeing what it's like for physicians to not be able to fulfill their calling of taking care of citizens in need. And it's tremendously costly to them. And what I really put forth in the book, Mindful MD, is that we have to focus on the parts of this that we can control as opposed to the parts that we can't. And we can talk a little bit more about that, Tom, but I think that provides a little bit of a preface to a deeper discussion.
I guess the facts, if we present them, are going to be shocking to everybody. I mean, I knew some of these facts, but I didn't know to the degree to which it's really kind of breaking down the whole system. You know, for example, you know, the number of suicides, is I didn't realize that, you know, and I think most people, I talked to a couple of people just randomly on the street in the past couple of days, and they expressed disbelief when I told them what was going on. They didn't believe it.
I think the facts can be very shocking for the general public, who, in general, reveres physicians.
That's right. Yes, Gail.
Educated, motivated, caring individuals that they are, but perhaps doesn't understand what it's like to be a physician, to really be, you know, involved in matters of life and death, to be giving emotionally difficult, painful news to patients on a regular basis, new diagnoses of cancer, etc. And the pandemic was really hard on our healthcare providers. I mean, if you think about the early part of the pandemic, when there wasn't a cure, there was no vaccine, there weren't enough ventilators, there wasn't enough protective personal equipment, and physicians had to live in fear that they would get this deathly disease or that they would bring it home to their loved ones. And that, you know, that was the early part of the pandemic. Then we, of course, developed vaccines, we developed some treatments, we have more ventilators available, et cetera. But just think about the politicization that we saw. And I have coached many physicians who were struggling to take care of patients who had chosen not to get vaccinated, often because of difficult and false news that they had understood about the risks of the vaccine. And some of those patients would end up on a ventilator, and the family members would be screaming at the doctors, you know, you have to save my loved one. And yet that loved one, you know, hadn't gotten the protective vaccine that they could have gotten. And then there were loved ones who wanted, you know, all kinds of ivermectin and other unproven therapies given to their loved ones, and the whole thing became very volatile. And it was doctors that were caught in the middle.
I don't think we can really
overstate the impact that the pandemic had on healthcare providers. There's been an uptick in violence towards healthcare providers, doctors, nurses alike. The job is really threatened in many ways. We have to understand all of that when we, as citizens, go in to see our doctors and they're rushed and running behind and they're sitting there typing on a computer and we're sitting there thinking, gosh, you know, don't they care about me? They care tremendously, but they're really, the squeeze is up. More physicians. The squeeze is on to do more. To see more patients, to do more procedures, to keep the whole thing moving in a way that is really not helpful for patients or doctors alike.
My wife's father was an ophthalmologist. He's dead now, a couple of years ago, in the south of France, and a pretty prominent guy, surgeon as well. and Frenchman, and he complained about these issues since I met him, you know, 40 years ago. And I find it so eerie, Gail, that, you know, years and years later, I hear these conversations I had with him in my head when I'm talking to you. And he complained about it in France. And I guess, you know, I think his main message was, Gail, that he wanted to help people, and he did. He was an extraordinary guy, you know, really, really caring, really loving person, and just wonderful physician, eye doctor. But he explained many times that when he was on call, he would not sleep enough, and he would be called in the middle of the night. He'd have to go restore somebody's eyesight, an eyeball been punctured or whatever, you know, some gruesome thing. And he would get up the next morning and have to go to the hospital and go to work. So I used to
say, that is the life of the physician, because physicians take call.
Yeah.
And we learn in our training, certainly when I trained, which is, you know, in the late 80s into the early 90s, you know, you learn lucky if you got 2 hours sleep when you were on call.
That's right.
If you were an intern and a resident kind of bearing the brunt of the emergency cases. So sleep deprivation, unfortunately, is something that's very familiar to physicians.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that it's the factor that's contributing to burnout.
Okay.
We get used to it. We get used to it.
That's true. That's true.
But what we don't get used to is when there's all kinds of corners being cut by our health systems, and we can no longer provide the safe, outstanding care that we pride ourselves on.
Yeah, it reminds me of a conversation I had with a very close friend of mine maybe 30 years ago. And this person was in the U.S. Air Force, a kind of a senior level. And this person told me about, I guess, you know, I just looked it up on the net. In the 50s and 60s, especially, there were very high rate. Well, I don't know how high, but, you know, considerably alarming rate of accidents. You know, Air Force jets were crashing and killing the pilots. And I guess at some point he told me, this person told me, that the civilian leadership of the Air Force in the Pentagon realized that they had to study the situation and they had to bring it under control. And in fact, remove the high rate of accidents from the situation. You know, they had to rectify the problem. And indeed they did. Now, I don't know exactly how they did it, but I think they just looked at the entire situation and they brought it under control. And now they have a protocol and they have very few accidents. So I'm just suggesting that we might be able to bring the whole system back to life if we look at the entire thing, analyze it, and realize, okay, I came up with this idea before I called you. You know, number one, hours worked. Number two, know who you are, have the self-knowledge of who you are, you know, mindfulness, and sleep. So if we can get less hours worked, and we know more about ourselves, and we get more sleep, maybe we're, and of course, this leads to mindfulness, as you say, we're going to be good. But until then, we're on a catastrophic decline.
Well, I think it's all well and good to think about the airline industry, and many people bring that up regarding
really
what healthcare could learn from another industry. It's commonly talked about. Toyota is another,
okay,
you know, example that's often touted of efficiency and yet
okay
caring for the workforce. A number of things have been tried for physicians. So in 2003, there was what was called work hour restriction. So when I was a resident in the late 80s, early 90s, you know, it wasn't unusual to work 100 or 110 hours. The work hour restrictions that came in place in 2003 said that residents should work no more than 80 hours per week or
okay
24 consecutive hours on duty. Now, that's used in all residencies, but sadly, a lot of residents are told to lie.
Oh, really?
If they should do more hours than that,
yeah,
their program would be blamed by a governmental agency if they actually report that. So
I see.
It's a step in the right direction. It's an acknowledgement that physicians, like everyone else, are simply human beings.
That's right.
In human bodies. And human bodies require rest. And they require rest for safety, for good function, for mental health, longevity, and lots of other reasons. So there have been some steps that have been made. I think at the same time, you know, 4% of healthcare systems in the United States are now owned by private equity firms, and that number
yeah
is rapidly increasing. So we have a real profit motive in this country. You know, anesthesiologists, someone, I was just coaching a surgeon this morning who told me that, you know, they have no anesthesiologist to, you know, man and woman the surgeries that he and others at his institution need to do.
I see.
And part of that is that there are now large corporations that basically hire all the anesthesiologists, have stamped out private practice, and control what goes on. So there's a bit of a monopoly now of how anesthesiologists are working.
Really?
And what that means is that those anesthesiologists have limited control over their jobs. There's some big corporate entity that has that control, and it's not necessarily aligned with patient need.
Yeah,
and
okay.
So, you know, in a capitalist society like ours, these fixes, we can spend a lot of time thinking about them, but it's questionable when they will actually be operationalized. And
I see, yes.
That's why it's all the more important to focus on the parts of the healthcare dysfunction, shall we say, that we physicians can control.
Sure.
And that is ourselves. And for me, that's what mindfulness is all about, and that's what led me to write the book, Mindful MD. Because mindfulness restores your autonomy and cures healthcare burnout, which, by the way, your listeners can download a free chapter if they would like.
Great.
DaleGazelle.com/mindfulMD.
Okay, great.
And really, you know, the book is all about healthcare through the lens of what we could argue are the most central actors in healthcare, the physician.
Mm-hmm.
And I've taken the stories of the over 500 physicians and physician leaders that I've coached, and I've interwoven them in what I hope and what I've been told is a very engaging, readable book.
Yeah.
To try to make a case for, you know, let's stop kind of railing against all the things we can't control. Let's focus on what we can. And the reason I say that, Tom, is that many physicians are caught in a cycle of anger.
Yeah.
Anger about the corporatization,
sure,
anger
sure.
about the push to productivity, anger that a lot of decisions about healthcare running are made up in the C-suite, not by the healthcare providers down on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And they can get so caught up in that anger, they can expend a lot of emotionality that leaves them even more at risk.
You're right. They're at war.
Gail,
they're at war. Yeah.
That's costly.
Okay,
that's
I agree.
For physicians.
Yeah.
So we have to help physicians focus on how they interact with the difficulties that they face, how they can have more autonomy in a system that has taken away a lot of their external autonomy, and how they can truly thrive in this complex healthcare matrix.
Yeah, so you're conceding that the conflict they feel building up in them, you know, they're at war effectively with the system, that's basically destroying them. That's what you're saying.
I think it's multifactorial. The working conditions for everyone in healthcare these days are really difficult.
Yeah.
Again, the demands are really quite intense, and it's hard to get everything done and still be true to your mission,
right,
which is really providing excellent care to vulnerable individuals.
Mm-hmm.
Those pressures are immense, and I would never be someone who would say, oh, you know, just kind of get your mind together and everything will be blissful.
Okay.
My role as a coach is to take things that may be overwhelming to the physicians that I serve and help them shift it from overwhelming to manageable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, let's face it, physicians are hard workers.
Sure.
They've been at this for a long time, high school, college, medical school, residency, fellowship.
Yeah.
Down, do the work, get the good grades, right? Take good care of people. They understand hard work, and they're not afraid of hard work.
No.
It's when the work tips over into overwhelming.
Yeah.
Again, another surgeon that I was coaching this week, it's really quite a story. He told me that he would have a whole weekend on call. So he'd be on call from Friday morning until Monday morning. Basically no sleep.
Right.
And he'd have a full load in the office on the Friday, and then he'd go into call, and maybe there'd be five new consults, and then he'd try to get some sleep, but he'd be woken up with at least two difficult cases coming in through the emergency room during the night. Now it's Saturday morning, the poor surgeon is exhausted, and he's still got Saturday and Sunday to get through.
My God.
Talked about this is just the volume of cases that was completely unsafe.
Right.
Untenable for him to do that much. And
that's right.
He didn't have the usual nurses because of understaffing. He might have a technician in the OR who really wasn't as skilled as they should be.
Mm-hmm.
And so these demands are real. Yeah. Very real.
That's pretty scary. So that's very scary. Yeah.
It is scary. It's scary for everyone involved.
Yeah.
It's scary for patients, but it is also deeply scary and disturbing for the physician.
Yeah.
To be kind of caught in that untenable situation. So we have to figure out how to make it less overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I think that manageable always beats overwhelming. And that's really at the crux of everything that I do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, what's very, very disturbing about this, of course, that's, you know, we're going to say that again and again, but here we have the most noble, one of the most noble professions, right, being basically put in a situation where it's in danger of collapsing.
Mm-hmm.
It's strange. I mean, can you think of a more noble profession?
In American society, right?
Yeah.
We all know that.
Yeah.
And so healthcare system is really just kind of a microcosm.
It is.
Other areas that are stressed. I mean, if you think about the educational system in this country, it's
extremely stressed. I agree.
Before the pandemic, and the public educational system took quite a beating with the pandemic.
Yeah.
Really unreal, and it still is. So it's not just healthcare, but
no,
maybe healthcare can serve as a wake-up call for other sectors of the American society that, you know, this is going in the wrong direction. We've got to put the brakes on this.
Yeah.
We've got to do things differently. We've got to treat our employees and our workers with much more respect and caring for them.
Mm-hmm.
They're not,
mm-hmm.
This is not just about numbers. This is about human beings and human lives and human quality of life.
Well, you know, a couple of weeks ago, it just so happens I was talking to a friend of mine, a general surgeon in Denver. And I didn't know about you yet, you know, and it's just coincidence. We were talking about the fact that he's not really happy and he's not finding most of his colleagues happy. In fact, he just recently, after I talked to you, you know, I contacted you, he admitted to me that most of his colleagues want out. And I said to myself, Gail, I mean, Gail, I'm like astonished, you know, they want out.
Something about that. So when we're in burnout, we can't see the good.
That's true.
It's kind of a channel of negativity. So what I see for a lot of physicians is that they're not focusing on the good that they're doing, the wonderful relationships that they're having with their patients, their ability to cure disease or to shift the course of incurable diseases for the better. They do so much good each and every day. But when we're in burnout, the negativity bias takes hold. We can't see that good.
Yeah.
And that leaves us almost like we're crossing the desert without a drop of water. I talk about this in my book, Mindful MD. So it leaves physicians very much like the one you're talking about. It's all bad.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing good here.
Yeah.
They sit around talking to their colleagues. What are we doing? We've got to get out of it. This isn't working. I wouldn't recommend it to my worst enemy. The one thing that I talk about in the book is with mindfulness, we develop a clearer lens of what's actually going on in front of us. In other words, sometimes we have a mental story that it's all bad, for example, that keeps us from seeing the good. And I want to be clear that, you know, I think when people hear the word mindfulness, they think, ah, oh, that's just fluff and woo-woo. You know, she's going to tell me to go meditate and everything will be wonderful.
Yeah.
And what I'm very clear about in the book is that is not what mindfulness is all about. Mindfulness is about how we use the machine that each of us operates in all of our waking hours, the instrument that each of us operates. And that instrument is the human mind. And most of us do not get operating instructions.
No,
physicians don't get operating instructions.
That's right.
We can find ourselves having all kinds of thoughts and mental stories that actually don't help us and are potentially untested and untrue.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you tell me about the physician that you're talking about, I think what I hear is that that person may be trapped in this place of negativity where it looks like nothing is going well.
Yeah, he's like that. Yes, he is.
The physicians that I coach is that they'll tell me that nothing's going well, that it's miserable, you know, that they're kind of out to get us, that nobody sees how hard I'm working. And once I empathize with them, I challenge them, and I say, well, wait a minute. Just think back to all the patients you've seen this week. Tell me about some bright spots.
Mm-hmm.
But it might take them a minute, and I cover this in the book, but then they start telling me about story after story about a wonderful patient that they saw, a wonderful interaction where they really helped somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a key part of mindfulness, stepping out of these mental stories that we can all get caught in. And it really obscures us from having a clear lens about what's going on. And as we're talking about, physicians are very costly.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing more privileged than being a physician. What a sacred honor to care for fellow human beings.
That's right.
This kind of skill set. And when we lose sight of that, you know, it's really detrimental for everyone.
Well, he claimed, and I don't think he's really kind of left-wing, but he argued that Ronald Reagan's deregulation of the healthcare industry, you know, in the early 80s, led to the, the concentration of power in healthcare providers, you know, hospitals, and everybody was out to make money, like you said earlier. And now we have this situation where the big money is going to the corporate owners of the system and not the professionals and medical doctors. So he said that if we were paid more, he would probably feel better about the whole thing. that's what he said. What
that I'm going to leave for some of the sociologists and health policy walks.
Yeah.
Of expertise. But, you know, we physicians do have a comfortable lifestyle. We are very fortunate that we're compensated at a good rate.
Yeah, sure.
But again, we don't learn how to really work with our own minds, our own patterns of emotional reactivity,
mm-hmm.
our own stories, our own difficult thoughts, the things that take us in a downward direction. And that is really what mindfulness offers us, much more than kind of the navel gazing that sometimes people associate with.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The young people that you're meeting at Harvard Medical School, are they understanding immediately what you're arguing? Are they kind of looking at you like, well, you know, that's not going to happen to me? I'm wondering what their attitude is like.
Well, there are a lot of studies now demonstrating high levels of depression, anxiety, and burnout in medical students.
Really?
As early as the second and third year of medical school.
Wow.
So medical students are not immune. They're seeing physicians in practice walk around unhappy.
Yeah.
They're seeing the ravages of burnout. So I don't think they're living in any kind of bubble. I think maybe they're hopeful that it won't happen to them.
Yeah.
But what's really important is that we help medical students learn these skills early on.
That's what I was just going to say.
On the part of the equation that they can control. I've been asked each year at Harvard Medical School to give some talks to the incoming class this summer.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited about that because this is what we need. We need to supply these tools, just like we supply all of the medical tools to our trainees. We need to provide them really strong tools so that they don't develop into burnt-out doctors, because this is preventable.
Oh, sure. I was going to say when I first started looking at your text, I said, well, this should be presented to first-year medical students. You know, early on, and that what we need to do. Yeah, go ahead.
I think there's a lot to be said there, because what I get into in the book is what I call the roots of burnout, the ways that our training can actually fuel a pattern of burnout as we move forward. We're taught that if we're not perfect, we may be deemed a failure.
Mm-hmm.
We're taught to compare ourselves to others and focus on where we're coming up short.
Mm-hmm.
You don't learn how to work with all the emotions that come up when you're dealing with life and death in a situation. And we learn to be very critical of ourselves, really not to look for our strengths and what we're doing well, but to focus on our deficits.
Mm-hmm.
And where I sit, I see that contributing to the difficulties that we then have when we're, you know, a so-called full-fledged physician. The difficulty that we have coping with all of the change and uncertainty and unpredictability in healthcare these days.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a lot that we can be doing in medical training, and I'm really excited to have written the book, because it's really a blueprint, frankly, of how we can do things differently.
Well, it seems like you're the first one. I didn't check on that, but I think you're the pathbreaker, right? Are you the first one to address this in a comprehensive way and a very serious way? Is that true?
Well, that's a funny question to actually ask the author. I'd like to say I'm the first person.
No, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but
wise sages make that decision.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I have the impression that this is not something that most physicians have been thinking about in the past 40 years. Is that correct?
Well, mindfulness is new in healthcare, and it's something that I think many physicians are a bit cynical about.
Okay.
They're facing all of these challenges in corporate America, in corporate healthcare, and it's easy to point the finger at all of those challenges.
Sure.
You can then start thinking, well, again, don't just tell me to go meditate, Dr. Gazelle, because that's not going to change anything.
Yeah.
So what I really tried to do in the book is sprinkle in lots and lots and lots of stories of real-life physicians that I have coached over the last 12 years to help illustrate how a mindful approach, not just sitting and meditating, but really becoming the master of our minds as opposed to the captain. I share a lot of vignettes in the book that show the power that this can have to help people thrive in their careers. So I hope I've done a good job of that.
No, I think so, yeah.
Surprising that physicians can be skeptical.
Well, the Greeks, I should say the Greek philosophers emphasized, I'm sure you know, that the mind is so powerful, we need to understand how to control our thoughts, how to overcome our emotions. And, I think the Greeks were the first ones to kind of get into that. And so the Western world is not really any longer focused on that kind of aspect, of life, right? I mean, we have significant control of our emotions. We can train ourselves, and I think that's the main message. Young people have to realize that it's going to be pretty tough. For example, I'm in an Airbnb at the moment because there are our house getting some work done, and there's a Chinese couple that owns the house. And she said it's in China, it's 997. So you work from 9 to 9, 7 days a week, and everybody's working flat out, and it's everybody's going crazy. Everybody's going crazy, basically, she said. And they're overworked. Everybody's facing intense competition in whatever job they seek to have. And so we just have this world, Gail, where we have no choice but to get control of our emotions and our thoughts. And it doesn't matter what you do, you're going to have to get control of it.
Well, I think what's important is to realize what's in it for us to get control of our minds. And that's really where I come from.
Yeah.
As a coach, helping everyone in healthcare see how much better they could feel about their work, how much more resilient they can be, how much more satisfied and fulfilled they can be in their jobs, how they can truly thrive rather than succumb to burnout.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, to me, is where the argument lies. Don't just do it because somebody tells you to do it.
Yeah.
You do it because it's going to really help you. And there's so much spillover with burnout. It's not just in our work life. You come home depleted.
Mm-hmm.
Frustrated, focusing on the negative. Our spouse might ask us how our work day was, and we tell them about everything that went wrong.
Yeah.
We sit at the dinner table. Our kids are trying to get our attention, but our mind is just fixed on all the problems we're experiencing at work.
Yeah.
And then we feel tremendously guilty. We get into bed, we ruminate, we can't sleep. So this is powerful, and we have to do something to stem the tide. And I really hope that my book can be part of that movement.
Yeah. Well, I noticed you do not have a prominent publisher. Right. You've, and that's a good thing, actually, because it means that the big corporations are not necessarily thrilled about your message. That's actually quite good.
Okay, I'll take it. Thank you, Tom.
Okay, look, we're at 35 minutes, and I don't know if I have more to say. I just wanted to mention again that 1 out of 2,500 physicians kill themselves, roughly each year. That's an approximate figure. And it's appalling. It really is amazing that a privileged group of people, working at a high level, earning, considerable amount, can get to the point where they kill themselves.
Well, again, it doesn't have to be this way. And really a pleasure talking with you today.
Sure. It's great, Gail.
It'll be helpful. Again, your listeners can download a free chapter at gailgazelle.com.
Yeah.
/mindfulMD.
Thanks so much, Gail. And I'll be in touch. I appreciate talking to you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Pleasure talking with you today.